Major Hahn, Royal 57. Did you ever have any incidents along the frontier?
No. Apart from patrolling the wire. Mm.
Do you do that every day? Or?
I think the troop did go along every day.
What sort of length of front were you having to cover along that inner German border?
I'd only be guessing. Mm. I can't say offhand. We knew it would stretch a certain way and back the other way. To give you the mileage, would be. Mm. I could check up and find out anyway from my journals.
What was your war role then for 12th Lancers? If the balloon had gone up, what did you think you were going to be doing?
I'm not sure, really. I think we would have to done a rear guard, because from being where we were, we couldn't go forward anything. Mm. And we'd have to drop back. So I'm not sure where the main party would be, really. Mm. I knew there was a fighting Bostel and Hona, and I just think we must have been, 15 miles from them?
You were certainly forward of them, weren't you?
Well forward. Mm. You see, and so I think that would have been our role, just to drop back and report, or watch to see whether anything happened through the wire. Mm. And then obviously we would then have to drop back. And of course, there was people at Lüneburg, which was up the other way, and there was also gunners. The third RHA was somewhere a bit to the south of us. I can't remember the name of the place offhand. And infantry. So I think we were forward of them, and that would be our position, just to report on what was happening in that area.
What sort of training were you doing when you were training up the HQ squadron?
HQ squadron. Mm-hmm. There's not much one could do with that, because they were all in, the lorry drivers were most of the time doing domestic work. Mm. The band, of course, were always
away.
Mm. The quartermaster department was always active during their side. There were no sort of bods that I could get my hands on to do much with.
Mm. What about the recce troop?
The recce troop again was used. He had his own troop leader, and they cooperated with different squadrons. I had no control to tell them what to do, really. Mm. It was very limited, except when we went on exercise to Saltar. Then we did a little bit of domestic supply and demands and whatever. But not like being with a squadron that you could really train and say this is what your role is, because everybody in an HQ squadron knew that role. Mm. And
they were all specialists, weren't they?
They were, yes. Mm.
Was the training program similar to that had been going on in the 4th Hussars? Were they doing things in the same sort of way in the 12th Lancers?
Well, one was the tank, one was armoured car.
Yes.
But an HQ squadron, I think, is still much the same. Mm. We've got your people to control. You still were responsible that your men were trained in small arms, they did that. Mm. Mundane things like that.
The basics.
And they fired their rifles or whatever arms they had, that sort of thing. But everything else was a normal day to day thing for as we were there. Mm.
What was it like living in Wolfenbottel compared to?
Oh, it was very nice, actually. Hona, and we were well away from a town, really. Sutter was our nearest decent town, where there was a big naffy and that sort of thing. But in Wolfenbottel, there was the town there, which was a lovely old German town, which was had everything in, and a most enjoyable place, I thought. Mm. But and that all the people in the shop were so friendly and helpful.
So you're on good terms with the locals up there?
Very good, yes. Mm.
Was the regiment, you know, when you returned to the 12th Lancers after being away, did you feel a sense of homecoming? Was the regiment the same as it was when you had left it, you know, in the way in which you got a feeling of the spirit of the regiment?
Well, everyone, I knew so many people in there.
And they were still there.
So nice, you know. Mm. Although I'd never served with the regiment as an officer before. But the people I knew so well, and they, I made very welcome, got on well with everybody. And as I say, they were still the same sort of people. Like the chap who took command of the squadron was Bobby Collins, who was in Italy, I was with. The next door squadron was John Richardson, who commanded 5 troop in B squadron. Matt Abraham came as second in command as a brevet lieutenant colonel, again, great friend of mine. So all those officers I knew very well. The second in command was Jerry Charrington, who I was a doctor with. So they were all...
They're all old mates then.
That's right. Mm. Yeah, so
what about amongst the soldiers? Were there any soldiers who you remembered
really
from your...
Probably half a dozen at the most who served. Yeah, I think half a dozen at the very most who served with me during the war.
Did the 12th Lancers have the same sort of proportion of conscripts as the 4th Hussars?
Much the same. Much the same. We had some jolly good sportsmen. We had John Charles, who was a top, one of the top English footballers. He was in the regiment, used to play. We had a very good rugby team, a very good cricket team. And we could put on a real good pantomime or show, but we had some talented singers and actors. And you know, it was great to have those sort of people. And we had a riding school there as well. So anybody who wanted to ride could go.
Was it well supported?
Well, certainly the officers all did, and so lots of other ranks took up riding, and some of the wives. Oh yeah, it was always very popular, and they had a good stable.
Did you have any? You'd said that, you know, when you were in the 4th Hussars, there were a couple of occasions where you thought the Russians might be on the way. Did you have any scares like that?
No, not really at the time.
Now it's around about that time that the Germans were actually
re-equipping
and the Bundeswehr was coming into existence. Did you see anything of them?
Not at that stage. I know they were down just outside Hoena, where they were getting some of the, I think, Leopard tanks. I know I went down and went down to that barracks. Again, I can't think of the name of the place, but that some of the regiment went down and we crawled all over the tanks and had a good look at them.
Yes, what did you think of them as tanks?
I thought they were lovely tanks. Mm. I think they were better silhouette than the Centurion was a good tank, I must say, but the Leopard I thought had a lovely silhouette. Great.
Good for deflection.
Mm. I don't know whether it was then or a bit later that I went on exercise with them. I think it was later.
What, were you attached to the Germans for that exercise?
No, I'm not attached to them. I was sort of doing an umpire, so I was more or less on my own, but under the British brigade HQ, and I was given a jeep, and I used to go to the different places where something was happening. I know one river crossing on the Weser, when the Germans were there, I had something to do with that. But it was always very good if you went to them and said and pointed out, look, this, this, and this, you're out of action. You know, that was, I accepted it, that was fair enough, you know. And same as I used to have to say to a British unit, you're out of action. Mm-hmm. I know there was one commanding officer of an infantry regiment in his vehicle, his command vehicle. And he'd done something, and I said, I'm sorry, Colonel, you're out of action. He's absolutely furious with me. He would have killed me if he hadn't called me, I think. But if you see a thing in a certain way, and it looks obvious that he would have been destroyed,
you've got to say so.
You've got to point out, say, let's say, right, you're out of action for an hour. You know, close your radio down, close everything down for an hour.
How did you decide on that? Did you just use your own judgment, or did you have a set of rules?
No, you could look, if you looked, you could say, right, he drove up to here, and there's the German tank, just the other side of the river, with a good line of fire on you, you know, and you're still here. If he'd have pulled back, you know, and if the tank is still there and you're still here and you haven't got a gun that will knock that tank out, I'm afraid you're out of action. Whereas if he'd have seen the tank and reversed straight away, he could have said, well, I put down smoke
and got back out of it.
Back and said, why, that's fair enough. Now, you can't move until that tank moves. You know, you're stuck here, so take it from here. But if he's there and he's done nothing, he's still there, then you can say, I'm sorry, you're destroyed. Because, you know, a bit of common sense, really.
Yeah.
You say you're out of action for an hour or half an hour or whatever.
When you were doing this sort of umpiring, did you have a complete exercise plan to work with?
Yes, we knew the general plan of the battle. But somewhat, I found it very interesting. Try to volunteer for those, to give me something to do.
I was going to say, it sounds as though you were not really fully occupied when you were 2IC of Headquarters Scotland. What, you know, what you found to keep yourself occupied?
Anything like that.
Occupied.
And as I say, I went on this particular course. But again, there was nothing much really to keep. So I volunteered to go to Malaya. There was a vacancy for different things in for an RAC officer in the Singapore Guard Regiment. So I spoke to the colonel, and the officer said, "Well, do you mind if I apply for this?" No. Because there was no future in any other way in the regiment. Really, it was just. They've got me back, I'm there with them, but I'm not doing anything. I'm not. I think one's got to find something to do. It's no good sitting down and saying, well, I've got nothing to do because the drive's off the wall. So I asked if I could take this job, and he said yes. So I was accepted, and that was 1958.
What did you have to do to be accepted? Was there any sort of selection process, or was it just a matter of applying?
Well, you apply, and then that goes to AG 17, and they obviously look and say, oh, yes, you can, this sort of chap can do this, you see. But I thought it was going to be for the Malaya Armoured Car Regiment. That's where I thought I would finish up. And when I got out to Singapore, I found it was more boring than what the 12 answers to IC was.
Goes to show you, sometimes it pays to be satisfied with what you're doing.
Right, there, you don't know until you... And,
that's true.
I found I was... the Singapore Guard Regiment were all Malay, and they were an infantry regiment.
Yeah.
but they were very limited in what they could do.
But why do you think they had asked for an officer from the RAC if it was all infantry?
Well, that's one of the things where when you got there, you found there was so many RAC, so many RASC, so many infantry, so many gunners. They sort of formed this up and say, well, we got... And regiments don't like parting with people. So they say, they lay down, say, right, RAC will supply two, so-and-so will supply two, and so on. And they get them there because... the regiment doesn't like losing its officers to any ERE job anymore. And we used to like sending a soldier from the regiment off to an ERE job because you're losing.
What's ERE?
Extra regimental employment. You see, and we used to find, well, somebody asked for a soldier or sergeant to go to a particular job. It could be Corps headquarters, it could be anything, it could be to Sandhurst, it could be to anything. So if you can't send your rubbish...
No, it gives you a bad name if you do that.
So you've got to pick someone who you're reluctant to send, because they've got a job to do, and there's nothing worse than sending a sergeant or somebody to a job, and he's sent back to the regiment as useless or with a bad report, because that reflects on... And of course, then the ministry comes back to the regiment and say, look, what you're doing is sending people like this to these particular jobs. So you've got to make sure that they are the person who you can rely on to do a job. So when I got there, you see, I found there was a chappy from the tank regiment, there was a couple from the gunners, there was a couple from infantry. A couple from RASC, all in this were these Malays, and they were all Malay soldiers from the RSM down, and they were very limited in what they you could. And I finished up with 2IC of A Company, and you used to take these chappies out on platoon training.
Were you giving them infantry training?
Yes.
Was that the idea?
Yeah, they were infantry. But their main job was to take them out and guarding vital installations. Like there'd be a guard made up of a CNC's house, and they'd be on the main gate and that's why. Another one, the guard would be on ammunition. Barges out in the straits, and you'd take them out on them, and that's like a thing. They were a guard, but they weren't all on guard at the same time. Those that weren't on guard, you gave them platoon training, and also one squad, one company would be up in the jungle at Kota Tinggi for a month, and so whatever company that was, you'd be with them. And you go through the jungle, you know, it was a time when there were terrorists about. But I think in that area, I don't think there was much danger of us meeting them, but we still had to go through all the procedures of crawling through the jungle and that.
Had you ever done any jungle training before?
No, I went straight from Wolfenbüttel. Within 6 weeks, I was crawling through the jungle, which I thought to myself, Freddie, isn't that what you expected?
How did you learn? Did you just study the pamphlets, or had you been to a school or course?
I had done sort of infantry training sort of thing.
But a long time earlier?
A long time earlier, but the basics were still there, you know. Most of it's common sense anyway, you know. And again, I had an officer with me who had been doing it some time before, who sort of helped me out and sort of advised me on different things. But it was a case of sort of crawling through places and going to a rubber plantation and sort of scouting around to see whether there's any terrorists in the area. And that was it. And you did this sort of practically every day for a month and came back to Singapore. Another company would be there. And when they weren't up there, they were doing this guard job, which meant you had to go round at different times in the night to check that they were
This is like being orderly officer again, isn't
That's
it?
Right.
Testing the pickets.
That's right. Mm. So, again, that was pretty boring. And so I thought, well, how can I get out of this? Well, I wrote to the Malay Armour College, and the commanding officer, and he said, oh, yes, I'll have you up here. You'll either be a squad leader or technical adjutant, but there's a vacancy for you. So I said, right, so I was all set to go. And then at the last minute, it was cancelled because the Malay government and the Ministry of Defence were at loggerheads. Who should pay for my passage out there? See, the MOD had brought me out there, and therefore, normally, the Malay regiment, if they wanted a British officer, would have to pay for him to come to me. And that was it. One wouldn't give way to the other. So the cardinal wrote me saying, sorry. And so I had to stay. And of course, I was pretty bored. So I wrote to one or two of the colonels. I wrote to Gilbert Monckton, Robin Buckbank, and Matt Abraham, said, for God's sake, if you can get me out of this. And bored stick. So they all got on to the AG 17.
Were you just seconded then to
yeah.
the Malayan Army for
right.
the time being? Yes.
That's right. And then AG 17 came out, Lord Grimthorpe, an old Lance Lancer. And he said, Freddie, I didn't have to come out to Singapore, but I've come out especially to see you. He said, I've had more letters from generals, brigadiers and colonels about Freddie Hum and the job he's doing, that I had to come out and do something about him. He said, but the trouble is, I agree that this job should be taken off the RAC list. It's not an RAC officer's job. You know, you're an infantry on your feet, whereas you're trained as armoured cars or tanks now. So we're going to take it off the list. But the trouble is, we can't send another man out to relieve you until your time is up. We're not going to send another RAC man in because it's not an RAC job. You see. He said, would you stay on at this job until your 3 years are up? He said, and then I promise you, I'll find you a job which you want, which will be good for you, you know, and you can almost pick whatever you want. You see, it's like, right, fair enough. I'll do that. So I had to
carry on with this. How often did they change round the companies between the
a month at a time.
A month at a time. So it's a 3 month
yeah.
cycle of things.
Mm. So in the meantime, what I used to do. If there was any course going, I'd volunteer for it. And first of all, there was a 3 month course, Malay language.
I was going to ask you how you communicated with your soldiers.
Well, I took this 3 month course at Nee Soon, and that took me away for 3 months. You know, I didn't get involved in any regimental duties or anything, although I still lived at home and motored every day. And so that was one good way. And so I passed in the Malay language course. And then the next thing I saw was coming up was a Red Pencil Fire Officer's course. Right, that'll do me. So off I went to Nee Soon again for, I think it was just 2 weeks for, and became a regimental fire officer. You did all the fireman's work, you know, and ladder climbing and the hoses and all that, which was, again, interesting and learned something. And that took me away for a bit. And then that came our first aid course, another 2 weeks. Off I went on that. And game. It was all pretty interesting. Later on, a regimental camps course. So I went to the Army Pay Master's place and did a couple of weeks to do all, went through all the captaincy, which I enjoyed. Came back and did that. And of course, I finished up doing the regimental fire officer, which it was funny because these Malays, they had no imagination. They had, well, we had a visit from the chief fireman who was testing the fire thing, and he came in to one of the back rooms and he put a great big cardboard cut out of a fire, you know, a flame somewhere. And the Malay soldiers looked at it. No spark or something. Oh, it's a fire. Sound the fire alarm. They just looked and said, you know, they were difficult to get through. But anyway, I used to, every morning I used to say at 7 o'clock, I used to fire, take them on fire drills because they had a different picket every day. I had to take them on their training. I did that. I did regimental boxing officer, so I used to, at about 6 o'clock every morning, I'd take them out, the boxing team, and do a 5 or 6 mile run, and come back, and during the afternoon, I used to take them up to the gym, and I used to box with every one of them, about 3 rounds with every man, because I was very, very fit, and no matter what the weight was, I could deal with them.
Were they keen on boxing?
Some of them were. I wouldn't say they had their full heart. If they got hurt, they would. They weren't really.
Not that keen.
So I used to do that with them. I also had regimental accounts, the PRI. And also the sergeant's mess account. And so every day the sergeant's mess books used to come down to me and I used to check them all through and whatnot and check the NAFI bills. And always I would pay the NAFI, I used to pay all the bills before the end of the month. So I knew that everything was clear. And I went to the NAFI one day and paid all the accounts and said, right, this is how it stands. Then I got a bill from the NAFI, all for about £100 or something like that. I was in dollars, of course. And I said, no, this is not ours. Went back to the NAFI and said, look, this is not ours. Which it is. I said, no. I know, I've got all mine in the book, this is not ours. It is. That was signed by Sean. I said, well, that's this, the stock hadn't come into my books, wasn't on the books. So, long and short of it was ours. But what has happened, that might have been going on for years, was I was always very strict with the accounts. You get some of the officers who weren't so strict and they just let things slide.
Yes.
But I was always very strict on it, and at the end of the month I knew exactly how I stood. And it turned out that the RSM had been going to the NAFI, buying stuff like that, bringing it back, all the whiskey and gins and that sort of thing, and selling them privately, making some money, paying the bill before the end of the month. Before I would have paid, or before I bought my things up to date. And he'd been getting away with it, of course, you see, because as I say, other officers probably went so far off.
What happened to him as a result of this?
I went to the colonel. No, I sent for the RSM first. I said, look, what's all this? Don't know anything about yourself.
Well, he was a Malay at RSM.
I said, well, he must do. It's come into the mess, and it hadn't been shown in the stock book. And I used to get the stock book every day, and then the new order came, the bill would come to me and the stock book, and I would check it thoroughly. Nope, got nothing. I said, all right, come with me, we're down to the commanding officer. I went to the commanding officer, and that I was saying to deny it. And when we came out, I said to the Malay, he could speak English. I said, right, I said,